Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
The last time we spoke, Chris Gibson, I always like to talk to you about things that are related to military. You've served all around the world as a colonel. You're now a congressman from the Hudson Valley. So I want to ask you this to begin with. You've taken a stand on Middle East policy and on Syria, and you mentioned it the last time we spoke, but I wonder if you could develop that a little bit more for us.
Well, look, what's unfolding, without question, is a tragedy. The loss of life in that country, the abuse of power. But look, from long experience, the idea that we would arm rebels is not a good one. Because in my experience, what we're going to end up doing is exacerbating the situation. It is not going to resolve it. We're going to have a hard time understanding who exactly it is we're arming. Just from my experiences in Iraq, you know, we were involved in training the Iraqi security forces, and we had challenges just keeping accountability of who it was that we were arming and training and ensuring that they had the proper accountability within their own ranks to not lose accountability of the weapons and all the equipment that we were giving them, and that they were using it in the fashion that and in the manner that it was supposed to be used. That was with an actual uniformed element. This is a rebel group that we have significant challenges understanding. And look, there are elements within those rebels that fought against my paratroopers. We know this. There are also elements that are imbuing democratic principles. But who's to say what's going to end up happening in this maelstrom?
We saw it in Afghanistan, certainly.
Yeah, and you know, here's the thing. We start arming these rebels. Like I said, it's not going to resolve the matter, and we're going to be held responsible. Because think about this. If another country gave arms to a rebel group for the express purpose of attacking us, we would view that action as an act of war. So, you know, getting involved in this matter in Syria, we are conducting an act of war. By arming these rebels, we're going to be held responsible for the outcome. And I mean, look, quite candidly, we're in sequester and we need to find a way to get a budget agreement so that we move forward. The last thing we can afford is to do something that's not in our interest. So, you know, I've argued that, and along with my colleague Peter Welch, a friend of mine, Democrat from Vermont, we have a bill in the House, and we have been working in a bicameral way with Senator Udall and Senator Paul to ensure that we get a vote first. Because as I mentioned, this is an act of war, and the founders were very clear on this, that on matters in war and peace, the people are to have a voice. The people are to have a voice through their representatives. So at the very least, there should be a vote in the House and Senate before we arm the rebels. So, you know, and unfortunately, you know, I brought an amendment along with Peter. We had an amendment to the DOD, to the Department of Defense appropriations bill from last week. And, you know, it was ruled out of order. And, you know, I can only think the only reason why it was ruled,
out of order by your leadership.
It was.
The Republican Party, yeah.
It was ruled out of order for that. And the only thing I can think of is they knew it would pass. And so this is one of my frustrations, that oftentimes the media will portray politics as partisan. You know, this is a big epic battle between Democrats and Republicans. And at times it can be that, about principles. But there are also times when this is the establishment versus, I mean, in my view, where the American people are. The American people don't want to go to war with Syria.
Okay.
And they're right.
I want to back up here. I do want to thank you, Chris, for doing this with us. But you're an expert. You've been over there. You've led troops. It seems to me there are a couple of things going on. One, of course, is the Shia versus the Sunnis. The other, of course, is this concept of democracy. You know, we say in Egypt, we want a democratic election. We elect a group of basically clerics or people who are close to a theology. And then when they get into office, perhaps they're not as democratic as we've insisted, you know, we're supporting. Can you make some sense out of all of this for us?
Well, unfortunately, I can't. And that's because, you know, I think we forced ourselves on the situation, not just Egypt, but quite frankly, in Palestine, too. There were some that thought that those elections occurred too quickly. And what you'll find is in circumstances such as these, when you do move to elections quickly, who's organized? Sure. Well, I mean, like Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood, they're organized. So it's not surprising to me. I'm sort of wearing my, you know, political scientist hat now for a second.
You do have a PhD in this field.
Well, you know, and look, they're organized. And so when you move towards elections, they're in a positional advantage to do well. And so, you know, ultimately, I hope we take pause and look at the situation in Syria. You've got actors involved beyond just the rebels and the government. You have Russia, there's Israel, there's Iran, there's Hezbollah. And, you know, I'm just concerned. I want to see us learn from our experiences. You look at Libya. I was very concerned that we would end up empowering people who hated us. And, you know, you look what happened, regrettably, what happened on the 11th of September last year in Benghazi, outrage to many, including myself. But look, let's learn from this. You know, the situation in Syria will not get better. It will get worse if we arm these rebels. Think about Russia for a moment, how they're likely to act. You know, publicly, they're gonna condemn us. But privately, I think they'll likely step up their support for the regime, including more fighter jets. And potentially serious surface-to-air. I'm not talking about just man-portable surface-to-air. I'm talking about the state-of-the-art surface-to-air. There could be Scud, more Scud-type missiles. The point is this. What do we do then? We came in for the ante. We upped it 5. You know, Russia comes in and sees that and raises. What do? Do we lay the cards on the table at that point? Or do we see that bet? And I'm concerned that where we go next is, well, since they're going to have fighter jets in the air now we're going to try to move towards a no-fly zone. Well, look. These things are fraught with enormous risk, and they're costly. And the chairman of the Joint Chiefs is on record saying exactly that. As I mentioned earlier, I mean, we're in the middle of a sequester that is not in the best interest of our country. We need the parties to come together. So the last thing we should be doing is spending money that we can't afford for issues and advancing causes that are not in our interest.
You're much more learned in this than I am, but let me ask you this. Eisenhower warned us about the military-industrial complex, the weapons and planes and the rest of it. Does this need to be done in order to keep everybody at work?
Well, you know, I'd like to think that's not what's driving this, but there is a belief, I think, in our country, and it's bipartisan, and it makes it challenging that, you know, in the wake of the Cold War, we have morphed into what I describe as the world's policeman. It's not in our interest to do this.
I'm not talking about being the world's policeman. We only have a minute and a half to go here. I'm talking about, do we need to manufacture, to keep on manufacturing the stuff of war in order to keep the economy, our economy, afloat?
I disagree with that. I think if we make the right choices, we'll make a proper transition to a defense, national defense, that protects this cherished way of life. We still need the world's strongest military as a deterrent. Peace through strength. And as we wind down our operations in Afghanistan, I'm hopeful that we'll have a long period of peace. And towards that end, let me say one last thing on Syria,
sure,
that there are some things that are going on that I'm encouraged by. And I want to not only endorse, but spur on. And that is the efforts we're making to try to bring diplomacy to the region. We're actually working with Russia and others to try to bring the warring factions to Geneva, to sit down to work out their differences. That's exactly the proper role for us. And I think on our best day, we are in a positional advantage to make a difference on that score with our ideas, such as they are instantiated in our founding documents, and the size of our economy, which is formidable and by a factor of 2 larger than any other in the world. These are forces of influence that I think if we used in the proper way could be a force of good for mankind.
Chris Gibson, always a great pleasure to talk to you. You have a PhD, you were a colonel, you led forces, and to me, you bring a wealth of knowledge to what we talk about here, and I thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Alan.